Chapter 3. Nothing to do. Note which ladies are requested not to read. In one of these establishments, daily advertised as most eligible for English, a friend of the writer lived. A lady, who had passed for some time as the wife of one of the inmates, suddenly changed her husband and name, her original husband remaining in the house, and saluting her by her new title. A caution to travelers. A million dangers and snares await the traveler, as soon as he issues out of that vast messagerie which we have just quitted. And as each man cannot do better than relate such events as have happened in the course of his own experience, and may keep the unwary from the path of danger, let us take this, the very earliest opportunity, of imparting to the public a little of the wisdom which we painfully have acquired. And first, then, with regard to the city of Paris, it is to be remarked that in that metropolis flourish a greater number of native and exotic swindlers than are to be found in any other European nursery. What young Englishman that visits it, but is not determined, in his heart, to have a little share of the gaieties that go on just for once, just to see what they are like? How many, when the horrible gambling dens were open, did resist a sight of them? Nay, was not a young fellow rather flattered by a dinner invitation from the salon, whither he went, fondly pretending that he should see French society, in the persons of certain dukes and counts who used to frequent the place? My friend Poxon is a young fellow, not much worse, although perhaps a little weaker and simpler than his neighbors, and coming to Paris with exactly the same notions that bring many others of the British youth to that capital, events befell him there, last winter, which are strictly true, and shall here be narrated, by way of warning to all. Pog, it must be premised, is a city man, who travels in drugs for a couple of the best London houses, blows the flute, has an album, drives his own gig, and is considered, both on the road and in the metropolis, a remarkably nice, intelligent, thriving young man. Poxon's only fault is too great an attachment to the fair. He sex, as he says often, ill be his ruin. The fact is, that Pog never travels without a on one under his driving cushion, and is a pretty looking young fellow enough. Sam Poxon had occasion to visit Paris, last October. And it was in that city that his love of the sex had liked to have cost him dear. He worked his way down to Dover, placing, right and left, at the towns on his route, rhubarb, sodas, and other such delectable wares as his masters dealt in. The sweetest sample of castor oil, smelt like a nosegay, went off like wildfire, hogshead and a half at Rochester, 8 and 20 gallons at Canterbury, and so on, and crossed to Calais, and thence voyaged to Paris in the coupe of the diligence. He paid for two places too, although a single man, and the reason shall now be made known. Dining at the table d'hôte at Ulix, it is the best inn on the continent of Europe. Our little traveler had the happiness to be placed next to a lady, who was, he saw at a glance, one of the extreme pink of the nobility. A large lady, in black satin, with eyes and hair as black as sloes, with gold chains, scent bottles, sable tippet, worked pocket handkerchief, and four twinkling rings on each of her plump white fingers. Her cheeks were as pink as the finest Chinese rouge could make them. Pog knew the article. He traveled in it. Her lips were as red as the ruby lip salve. She used the very best, that was clear. She was a fine-looking woman, certainly holding down her eyes, and talking perpetually of Estrent Duans, and Poxon, the wicked young dog, who professed not to care for young misses, saying they smelt so of bread and butter, declared, at once, that the lady was one of his beauties. In fact, when he spoke to us about her, he said, "She's a slap-up thing, I tell you, a reglar good one of my sort." And such was Poxon's credit in all commercial rooms, that one of his sort was considered to surpass all other sorts. During dinner time, Mr. Pogson was profoundly polite and attentive to the lady at his side, and kindly communicated to her, as is the way with the best bred English on their first arrival in the continent, all his impressions regarding the sights and persons he had seen. Such remarks having been made during half an hour's ramble about the ramparts and town, and in the course of a walk down to the custom house, and a confidential communication with the commissioner, must be, doubtless, very valuable to Frenchmen in their own country, and the lady listened to Pogson's opinions. Not only with benevolent attention, but actually, she said, with pleasure and delight. Mr. Pogson said that there was no such thing as good meat in France, and that's why they cooked their victuals in this queer way. He had seen many soldiers parading about the place, and expressed a true Englishman's abhorrence of an armed force. Not that he feared such fellows as these little whippersnappers our men would eat them. Hereupon the lady admitted that our guards were angels, but that Monsieur must not be too hard upon the French. Her father was a general of the Emperor. Pogson felt a tremendous respect for himself at the notion that he was dining with a general's daughter, and instantly ordered a bottle of champagne to keep up his consequence. Mrs. Bearn, ma'am, said he, for he had heard the waiter call her by some such name, if you will accept a glass of champagne, ma'am, you'll do me, I'm sure, great honor. They say it's very good, and a precious sight cheaper than it is on our side of the way. Do not that I care for money. Mrs. Bearn, ma'am, your health, ma'am. The lady smiled very graciously, and drank the wine. Are you any relation, ma'am, if I may make so bold? Are you anyways connected with the family of our immortal bard? Sir, I beg your pardon. Don't mention it, ma'am. But Bearn and Byron are evidently the same names, only you pronounce in the French way. And I thought you might be related to his lordship. His origin, ma'am, was of French extraction. And here Pogson began to repeat, are thy hay is like thy mother's, my fair child, Hada, sole daughter of my house and art? Oh, said the lady, laughing, you speak of Lord Byron? Author of Don Juan, apostrophe child or old, and Cain, a mystery, said Pogson. Do. And hearing the waiter calling you Madame Le Bearn, took the liberty of asking whether you were connected with his lordship, that's all. And my friend here grew dreadfully red, and began twiddling his long ringlets in his fingers, and examining very eagerly the contents of his plate. Oh, no. Madame Le Bearn means Mistress Baroness. My husband was Baron, and I am Baroness. What? Ave I the honor, I beg your pardon, ma'am, is your ladyship a baroness, and I not know it? Pray excuse me for calling you ma'am. The baroness smiled most graciously with such a look as Juno cast upon unfortunate Jupiter, when she wished to gain her wicked ends upon him. The baroness smiled, and, stealing her hand into a black velvet bag, drew from it an ivory card case, and from the ivory card case extracted a glazed card. Printed in gold, on it was engraved a coronet, and under the coronet the words, Baron de Florville Delville, ni de Melville Norville, root 8 bout. The Grand Pit Diamond, the Queen's own star of the garter, a sample of Otto of roses at a guinea a drop, would not be handled more curiously, or more respectfully, than this porcelain card of the Baroness. Trembling, he put it into his little Russia leather pocketbook. And when he ventured to look up, and saw the eyes of the Baroness de Florville Delville, ni de Melville Norville, gazing upon him with friendly and serene glances, a thrill of pride tingled through Pogson's blood. He felt himself to be the very happiest fellow in the continent. But Pogson did not, for some time, venture to resume that sprightly and elegant familiarity which generally forms the great charm of his conversation. He was too much frightened at the presence he was in, and contented himself by graceful and solemn bows, deep attention, and ejaculations of, S, my lady, and, oh, your ladyship, for some minutes after the discovery had been made. Pogson piqued himself on his breeding colon, I hate the aristocracy, he said, But that's no reason why I shouldn't behave like a gentleman. A surly, silent little gentleman, who had been the third at the ordinary, and would take no part either in the conversation or in Poxon's champagne, now took up his hat, and, grunting, left the room, when the happy bagman at the delight of a tete-a-tete. The Baroness did not appear inclined to move. It was cold, a fire was comfortable, and as he had ordered none in her apartment. Might Poxon give her one more glass of champagne, or would her ladyship prefer anything hot? Her ladyship gravely said, she never took anything hot. Champagne, then, a little drop? She would. Oh gods! How Poxon's hand shook as he filled and offered her the glass. What took place during the rest of the evening had better be described by Mr. Poxon himself, who has given us permission to publish his letter. Quillick's Hotel, pronounced Kiliacs, Calais. Dear Tit, I arrived at Calais, as they call it, this day, or, rather, yesterday. For it is past midnight, as I sit thinking of a wonderful adventure that has just befallen me. A woman in course. That's always the case with me, you know. But oh, Tit, if you could but see her. Of the first family in France, the Florval Delvals, beautiful as an angel, and no more caring for money than I do for split peas. I'll tell you how it occurred. Everybody in France, you know, dines at the ordinary. It's quite the stangy to do so. There was only three of us today, however, the Baroness, me, and a gent, who never spoke a word. And we didn't want him to, neither. Do you mark that? You know my way with the women. Champagne's the thing. Make 'em drink, make 'em talk, make 'em talk, make 'em do anything. So I orders a bottle, as if for myself, and, ma'am, apostrophe says I, will you take a glass of sham just one? Apostrophe take it, she did, for you know it's quite the stangy here. Everybody dines at the table d'hôte, and everybody accepts everybody's wine. Bob Irons, who travels in linen on our circuit, told me that he had made some slap-up acquaintances among the genteelest people at Paris, nothing but by offering them sham. Well, my Baroness takes one glass, two glasses, three glasses. The old fellow goes, we have a deal of chat. She took me for a military man, she said. Is it not singular that so many people should? And by 10 o'clock we had grown so intimate that I had from her whole history, knew where she came from, and where she was going. Leave me alone with them. I can find out any woman's history in half an hour. And where do you think she is going? To Paris, to be sure. As he has her seat in, what they call the coupe, though you're not near, so cooped in it as in our coaches. I've been to the office and seen one of them. As he has her place in the coupe, and the coupe holds three. So what does Sam Poxon do? He goes and takes the other two. Ain't I up to a thing or two? Oh, no, not the least. But I shall have her to myself the whole of the way. We shall be in the French metropolis the day after this reaches you. Please look out for a handsome lodging for me, and never mind the expense. And I say, if you could, in her hearing, when you came down to the coach, call me Captain Poxon. I wish you would. It sounds well traveling, you know. And when she asked me if I was not an officer, I couldn't say no. Adieu, then, my dear fellow, till Monday, and vive la joie, as they say. The Baroness says I speak French charmingly. She talks English as well as you or I, your affectionate friend, S. Poxon. This letter reached us duly, in our garrets, and we engaged such an apartment for Mr. Poxon, as beseemed a gentleman of his rank in the world and the army. At the appointed hour too, we repaired to the diligence office, and there beheld the arrival of the machine which contained him, and his lovely Baroness. Those who have much frequented the society of gentlemen of his profession, and what more delightful, must be aware that, when all the rest of mankind look hideous, dirty, peevish, wretched, after a 40 hours coach journey, a bagman appears as gay and spruce as when he started, having within himself a 1,000 little conveniences for the voyage, which common travelers neglect. Parkson had a little portable toilet, of which he had not failed to take advantage, and with his long, curling, flaxen hair, flowing under a sealskin cap, with a gold tassel, with a blue and gold satin handkerchief, a crimson velvet waistcoat, a light green cutaway coat, a pair of barred brick dust-colored pantaloons, and a neat Macintosh, presented, altogether, as elegant and distinct an appearance as anyone could desire. He had put on a clean collar at breakfast, and a pair of white kids as he entered the barrier, and looked, as he rushed into my arms, more like a man stepping out of a bandbox, than one descending from a vehicle that has just performed one of the laziest, dullest, flattest, stalest, dirtiest journeys in Europe. To my surprise, there were two ladies in the coach with my friend, and not one, as I had expected. One of these, a stout female, carrying sundry baskets, bags, umbrellas, and woman's wraps, was evidently a maid servant. The other, in black, was Poxon's fair one, evidently. I could see a gleam of curl papers over a sallow face, of a dusky nightcap flapping over the curl papers, but these were hidden by a lace veil and a huge velvet bonnet, of which the crowning birds of paradise were evidently in a molting state. She was encased in many shawls and wrappers. She put, hesitatingly, a pretty little foot out of the carriage box and was by her side in an instant, and, gallantly putting one of his white kids round her waist, aided this interesting creature to descend. I saw, by her walk, that she was 45, and that my little Poxon was a lost man. After some brief parley between them in which it was charming to hear how my friend Samuel would speak, what he called French, to a lady who could not understand one syllable of his jargon, the mutual hackney coaches drew up. Madame Le Baron waved to the captain a graceful French curtsy. "Dieu," said Samuel, and waved his lily hand. "Dieu Adamang." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.